The Fan on Demand. A very good day. I'm Nigel Reed.
And I'm Bob Yerush.
And this is The Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week, desperate times call for desperate measures. Stephen Hart quits as national coach following Canada's disastrous World Cup exit. But what must the CSA do to fix the problem both on and off the pitch? TFC rolls back prices to try and tempt disillusioned fans back to BMO, but is it too little too late for the worst team in MLS? We'll talk to Stephen Brunt and the CSA president about where soccer in Canada at club and international level goes from here. All that and more, plus your opinion. Yes, that's right, your opinion. And we know you have them. And if you don't have them by now, this is the week to have an opinion on just about anything connected to Canadian soccer. Right here on The Soccer Show. Now, as you know, I'm paid to speak and to give an opinion. But I think after the events of the last 48 hours, the truth is I'm speechless. So I'll use, nay steal, someone else's words. Ray in Ottawa emails the show, nigel@fan590.com, by the way. If you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. nigel@fan590.com, or you can tweet me. If you can squeeze it into 140 characters, @Nigel_Reed, R-E-E-D, @Nigel_Reed. Here's Ray in Ottawa, who writes, I cannot believe how bad this is. I could find a boys' U-17 team from Ottawa Gatineau that would have performed better. Honduras just isn't that good. I cannot wait to hear what Bob and you have to say on Thursday night soccer show. So Ray, cleverly, has thrown the ball back in our court, because now he wants our opinion on what happened on Tuesday. No hex, just humiliation in the humidity of Honduras. There's way too many H's there. I'm done.
Well, I'm still in shock. I didn't sleep very well Tuesday night. Nigel, you and I watched the game. We were dumbfounded. And we, you know, could watch those goals go in so easily, so quickly, uncontested. A Canadian team that turtled after 7 minutes, offered no resistance, no heart. There was no leadership. I mean, they weren't even angry. If I'm playing on a team that's getting hammered and embarrassed while somebody's going down, somebody in white with an H on their chest is going down. No resistance, no feeling. I mean, how did they become this way? I have no idea. And unfortunately, Stephen Hart has to wear this. In many ways, I feel for him. But this is his team, and the team's performances are his responsibility. And to go down the way they did is inexcusable. And we've heard so many comments now over the last 2 days, Nigel. We've read a lot of blogs, a lot of people's feelings. You know, we had the opportunity that we blew at home. We've talked about that on a number of occasions. But these players are all professional. You know, Kevin McKenna plays for Cologne in the German Bundesliga. We have each one of those guys is earning their living playing soccer. And for them to put on that display is just mind-boggling. I knew it was going to be tough. We all predicted that Canada would go through because we thought, you know, we got to this point. I mean, Cuba only lost 1-0 in San Pedro Sula. And you know, surely we can do just as well as Cuba can, or just a little bit better. That gets us a tie. Boy, but it just came crashing down so quickly. And I'm sure a lot of those players are in shock, as I am. You know what? The country counts on you. You put on red. you put on red, and I know this is going too deep, but you're wearing your country and you're wearing people's feelings who are watching you. They're counting on you. My God, people lot. I mean, I hate to go this far, but people went to war for Canada. We were supposed to go to war in San Pedro Sula. Nobody had the war paint on. And I was looking for some individual to at least break through that pathetic rubble that was our national team, but nobody did. They were all gutless. It was terrible.
You cannot defend the undefendable. Nobody has really tried, and frankly, nor should they. It was a thoroughly unacceptable performance. It was a surrender. It was a submission. It was that bad if you didn't see the whole game. And to be honest, you and I sat there and watched it. We watched the first 20 minutes. We saw those Canadian chances come and go. We're screaming at the TV. And then suddenly Canada are two down. And then they're three down. And we're still watching. And then we know what happens thereafter. And we kind of lost our soul as well. We had to watch it because we had to watch it. We didn't want to watch it. But from a player's perspective, and we'll get on to Stephen Hart, who has done the only thing he could do, actually, and stepped down as national coach later. But you've been in this position many, many times as a player. And you addressed some of those concerns there in terms of pulling on the national jersey. Of course it was going to be tough. It should be tough to get to the World Cup. If it was easy, then it wouldn't be a 32-nation World Cup. You'd have 132 teams. You don't. And bear in mind, we're not talking about Canada getting to the World Cup. We are talking about Canada getting to the round before the World Cup, and that's a place that this country hasn't been in 15 years. And now we're talking about another 6 years before the next World Cup in Russia in 2018. But how can it be, bearing in mind all the things you said about the fact that this is playing for your country, you're a paid professional, this is what you do for a living, this is the day job, that 11 souls can go out there, have those early chances, then just melt away and give up, because that's what they did. It's not the fact that Canada lost in Honduras. In all truth, even though we sat here last week and trumpeted the fact that we thought they could get through with a point, I think most of us realistically thought they probably wouldn't win that game. And if they'd lost by two or three, then we'd have said, you gave it a go, you got to within one point of the hex. But they didn't get that far. They never got even close to getting that far. My concern is, the player's mentality in that situation. And how can that possibly happen to 11 players where they just throw in the towel and the captain says at halftime, well, you know what? It's damage limitation now. What do you mean it's damage limitation? You're 4-0 down. And then within 90 seconds of the second half starting, they're 5-0 down. What does that say about the player's mentality to you and players that you recognize, when you were playing for your country a few years ago?
Well, it evokes a lot of emotion.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And it should do. It really should do.
Well, it evokes a lot of emotion. But watching that team play, they were indifferent. And indifference is the worst thing that an individual can express. If you're too giddy and too emotional, that may work against you. And if you're angry at someone, that may work against you, but at least it's some sort of an expression that comes out of you. I don't know if these guys like each other, Nigel. I don't know if they like each other.
You told me they didn't.
Well, the way they played tells me they don't like each other.
Okay.
Because if I liked the person next to me or in front of me, I would work hard to make that person look better or play better. I would urge him to do better. I would be next to him. I would talk to him. And if there was something wrong, he would need to tell me. 11 players looked like they were playing in quicksand.
Yes, they did.
So I'm thinking about what Stephen Hart told us about why they were flat against Panama. He said the players complained about heavy legs. Well, they sure looked like they had heavy legs again. Is this something that happens when they go into Central America? This time they got sleep. Last time they didn't get sleep. I'm looking for a reason to help these guys out, but I can't.
No, you can't, and you shouldn't. And, you really shouldn't.
And then, of course, and I'm going to say this, comes that really disturbing interview that Julian de Guzman gives Sportsnet the night before the game, telling the Canadian soccer fans, after we get the result, guess what? My baby brother is ready to play for Canada. I mean, that is absolutely unbelievable. I wouldn't take that guy if he swam across the Atlantic, you know, with 15 alligators chasing him. Are you kidding me?
He'd swim fast.
Plus, I don't even think he's eligible. I think he basically gave up Canadian citizenship and to renew his passport, he'd have to, you know, come to Canada and claim residence for a year. I believe that. I was told that by someone who's very high up in the CSA. So why would you make that declaration at that time?
Two things on that. You're right. He's not a Canadian citizen as of this time. Now, I'm sure there are ways that red tape can be cut through to fast-track suitable applicants, shall we say. So let's just say that Canada had got the result and had got to the hex. Would de Guzman Jr. have been eligible for the hex, which begins, I believe, in February or March of 2013? Well, they'd have had to fast-track it pretty quickly. Second thing on that, and I've been talking to a few people about this, including you, and I have to say this, without sounding like a Euro snob, of which I have been accused many times over the years since I arrived in Canada 8 years ago, but here's the point. In a proper football-playing country, that interview would never have been done and never aired the day before the game. What are we talking about here? Because if you follow that argument to its natural conclusion, yes, de Guzman Jr. is needed by Canada because he's a decent player. But if you follow that argument to its natural conclusion, fine. So my younger brother's going to come and be the saviour in the hex. That's great. Oh, by the way, whose place is he taking? Dwayne De Rosario, Atiba Hutchinson, all the guys that did the grunt work to get you there in the first place, and now in flies the saviour, Jonathan de Guzman, and probably alongside him, Junior Hoyle.
Well, we don't have to worry about him. He's going to Jamaica because they made the hex.
They got the hex.
We don't have to worry about Junior. Absolutely. Junior, is his career is now set in place. Good for him. But these guys all come from, what do they call the youth, the me generation? Is it? In the year 2000s, it's like that generation is the me generation.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it sure fits this group.
Mm-hmm. So, we're going to talk to Victor Montaliani, the president of the CSA, later in the show. Very soon, we're going to talk as well to Stephen Brunt, of course, who will have his own thoughts on this. I've got 30 seconds. In the light of the fact that Stephen Hart has done the honourable thing and stood down, and after 8-1, you have to do that. You have to do that. But is it his fault or is it the player's fault for what ultimately happened?
He's at fault. And not totally, because no man should wear what those 13 players put him through. But, Stephen, he's in charge of motivating this group. He's in charge of putting the right formation on against the right teams. I would argue that he made a mistake against Honduras at home. And that's 2 points that cost us qualification.
Which wouldn't have mattered in the final event had that victory been achieved at BMO Field. You're watching on Sportsnet World and listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Please join the conversation. Otherwise, it's just us two and four men and a dog. I got an email or a tweet from the dog, by the way. Might get to that later in the show. Thanks for joining us. Reid Nyerushi. Sifting through the rubble of another dashed dream. Canada not so much eliminated, more exterminated from World Cup qualifying at the hands of Honduras. We don't need to tell you any more about it. By now you will have watched it, read about it, seen the highlights. Not that there were many from a Canadian point of view. Although Ian Hume's free kick, I have to say, if David Beckham had taken it, they'd still be talking about it. There we are. So Stephen Hart, nice guy, honourable man, does the right thing. You can't get past 8-1. He had no choice but to fall on his sword.
No, and he is an honourable man, and he's a good man, and he did the right thing because he is a good man. But it, unfortunately, it, you know, we need a fresh start. Someone new taking this program, hopefully, to try and get to a place where we can get our fans back and be excited again about soccer in Canada.
Well, you see, it's not just about this result. It's about the ramifications of what happens down the line, because over the last, what would we say, couple of years or so, suddenly Canada are playing to home crowds, big home, sizable crowds. You know, the media awareness and acceptance of Canadian international soccer has risen considerably over these last two qualifying rounds. And I just get the impression it all came crashing down, and it might have come to one horrible, abrupt halt as a result of what happened in Honduras. Nobody knows that more than our first guest on the show this week from the Globe and Mail and Sportsnet, Stephen Brunt. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nigel. Hi, Bobby. How are you doing?
Hi, Stephen.
We're doing well. I mean, let's just explore this a little further, Stephen. You know, the result apart, what do you see as the ramifications medium term, just in terms of the profile of the game in Canada as a result of what's happened here?
Well, I think you nailed it, just what you were saying just before I came on there, Nigel. Expectations were high and interest was high. You know, I don't think were crazy out of whack, but you know, having watched this round of qualifying, I think, you know, the sport is at a different place now than it's ever been in this country. The people are ready and anxious to get behind our national teams, both on the men's and the women's side. Soccer literacy is higher than it's ever been in the history of the country. And there's just a real appetite to be part of the big show. I think people want to imagine. I know, you know, 86 was 86, but, you know, a lot of the people you're talking about either weren't around in 86 or weren't paying attention in 86, and they love the World Cup. They love that everything about it, and they just imagine what it would be like to have a team in there. And even just getting to the hex, I think this time there are a lot of people already kind of having the fantasy about what it would be like to cheer for your own team, for your own country in the World Cup. And so to have that crash down, you know, in a game where, again, realistically going in there and getting a result, everybody knew it was going to be tough, but 8-1. You know, I'll tell you something. If David Beckham makes that free kick in a game where his team loses 8-1, I don't think anybody's talking about it.
All right. Fair point.
It's just that there was so much wrapped up in this. And, you know, the problem is, the kind of day after problem is, and I, you know, interested what you guys have to say about it, but, you know, ideally you'd be able to say, well, don't worry about it because the next time around, the next cycle, there's things to look forward to here. This is just the beginning. And I don't think anybody who pays attention here can make that argument.
You see, what concerns me here, and I'm going to let Bob and you chat in a minute, and I'm going to enjoy the conversation, but just to extrapolate that point a little further, here we are in the middle of a hockey lockout. Nobody's playing hockey. It was soccer's big chance in a way, and I'm sure there have been them before. I'm sure there will be those again in the future. But to me, Stephen, this was Canadian international soccer's big chance to crawl out from under that rock of media obscurity and grab the limelight. And unfortunately, they wet the bed.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It was a tipping point. And I think, you know, I wrote that, and a lot of people wrote it before the match, that this had the potential. You know, just think of the build-up to the hex, even just the build-up to the hex next spring, and what we'd be talking about if Canada was playing Mexico, Canada was playing the United States. Three places, three automatic berths at stake, one play-in berth at stake. You know what the interest level was like for this round, what it would have been like for that. And you kind of pull the rug out from under people, not just with, you know, a close loss or an understandable loss or a loss you could rationalize, but by total systems failure and a quit job. You know, it's an ugly thing to say in sports, but sometimes it happens. They quit.
Well, they sure did, Stephen. Here's what's funny about this game. I thought that Panama at home didn't allow Canada to play. They actually made it difficult for us to put passes together.
Yes.
And we never developed any type of a positive rhythm, Stephen. And I think over time they wore us down, and then they scored the two goals that they did. The funny thing is that Honduras actually gave Canada space to play, I thought. And, I mean, it led to the first two goals. But even afterwards, I thought there was room in midfield. These guys were like they were playing in quicksand. There was absolutely no urgency to move the ball quickly. Nobody got into position. Nobody was supporting. And Honduras wasn't putting a full court press on these guys.
No, you're right. Honduras, you know, they didn't have to play an open game, you know, once they got the lead because they didn't have to worry about goal differential. The Panama performance by Canada was really flat. And, you know, I think Di Rosario getting hurt at the beginning of that game, mm-hmm. you know, there are a couple of asterisks you could maybe attach to the Panama performance. But I think you're right. I think Panama smothered them in a lot of ways in that match. But this was a wide-open match. Canada had two great chances in the first 10 minutes.
Well, yeah. And I said last week that, you know, when you get into a war, you know, the analogy of being on a soccer field is winning those 50-50 battles. And when our captain lost that first battle in the air to Costly that put in Bankston, yep. then that it's like the whole team kind of said, oh my God, you know, Kevin was mm-hmm. I think was even ill going into the game. Here's our captain losing the battle. He's not feeling well. It's going to be a bad day.
I think you're right. I think that goal, and I assume Kevin McKenna was not 100% going into the game. Yeah. I think we heard that he was sick. He certainly didn't look like himself, and you know, he has been a real rock for Canada in the past, so I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass on things, but yeah, it was just such a kind of a horrible fundamental mistake that led to that goal, and you really did, you know, there were, instead of the kind of fight back that you would have hoped you would have seen there and the resolve, you know, I think literally and figuratively you could see guys' heads drop, and I think that plus the early misses.
Right.
Like, you know, they were at 2-0, the game was over. At 2-0, it was way over, and that shouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, you're absolutely, and Bob made the point earlier before you joined us, Stephen, that it doesn't really matter what the sport is. If you're wearing the national jersey and you lose, well, sometimes you get beaten by the better team. That happens in sport because sport has to have winners and losers, but it's about the way you lose. You know, you can't just, to use an expression I've learned since I've been here, mail it in. You just can't. You know, go down fighting, go down swinging while you got a puncher's chance, but you can't just wave the white flag.
No, it's inexcusable.
Yeah.
People want to support these guys, yeah. and they wanted to believe in them going into the match. And you could, I guess you can make the argument that Honduras is a better side, although when they played, you know,
slightly different not lineup, here they weren't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when they played in Toronto, slightly different Honduras lineup.
Yeah. Yes.
But Canada, you know, should have won that game on merit.
Yeah.
Stephen, not one aggressive tackle. I think the referee had the easiest game to ref that he probably ref at that level in the longest time.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, everybody's sitting there looking at, I remember before the match saying, you know, here's this referee, his last international match, he's an obscure guy, you know, we're going to get jobbed by the referee. And, you know, no one needed the referee.
No.
You're right, he had a very easy night.
Later, we're going to talk to Victor Montaliani, and I'm sure he'll have some an interesting take on the last 48 hours. It's very easy, of course, Stephen, to say, fine, okay, the coach has done the honourable thing and fallen on his sword. Now what about half his team who are the wrong side of 30? Let's get rid of them. I tell you what, while we're about it, why don't we just rip it up and start with a blank new sheet of paper?
Well, the problem is there's no easy thing to say here, right? Mm. And, you know, Stephen Hart, obviously, and I like Stephen Hart a lot.
I think we all do. Yeah,
and, we sure do.
You know, he kind of wound up with that job because there were, you know, few better alternatives, and because they'd gone other routes before with the resources they had and it didn't work. He certainly did a better job than his immediate predecessor did. You know, Stephen had to go, obviously, and after a match like that and, you know, given the situation. But sure, yeah, you know, so where's the next generation? Who's the next generation?
Yeah.
You know, who's ready to step into the shoes of, it's, you know, not quite Canada's golden generation. You know, you can't overstate it, but the Di Rosarios of this world are historically, he's a historically a very good player for Canada. There's, mm-hmm. we haven't produced a lot of players like Dwayne Di Rosario. So who's the next Dwayne Di Rosario?
I don't think
he's out there. So, you know, so we're going to go back and start looking at, you know, which level do you want to start at to build the next team? Under 15, under 12? Where do we go?
and that said, Stephen, let's say that the CSA and Victor Montaliani has this, you know, master plan and a strategical plan to get the right person in charge. Who's going to take this job where it is right now, understanding what's expected of him, and how long do you expect me to get this job done by? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh my goodness, you know.
Well, see,
how do you sell this position?
Well,
you get into the catch-22 here, right? Even if they had the resources to go out and hire a big-time international coach, no big-time international coach is going to take this job.
Well, yeah.
You know, isn't that true? Like,
I would say it'd be a tough sell.
It is a tough sell. No question about that. Any coach who has a track record in international soccer that's anything like approaching a success, you know, isn't going to risk his reputation by taking this job on.
Well,
you know, I've even heard the suggestion today that we should poach John Herdman from the women's team and give him the job.
John Herdman's too smart to take this
job. Yeah, I think he probably is.
Yeah, no, and you know, and look, there's even the guys who are mercenaries. You know,
and there are plenty of them.
There's lots of them, but you know what? They go for the money, but they also look for situations in which they can succeed because that's their stock in trade. You know, look at who's hitting. He's not stupid. You know, he chooses, you know, pretty cleverly the gigs he takes because he goes to places where he has a chance to succeed. You know, I can't see, I don't care who it is. You know, you can hire Jose Mourinho. I'm not sure he has a chance to succeed right now with Canada.
Not now he doesn't because they've been eliminated.
Well,
but Stephen,
I'm talking about the 6 years.
Yeah, I know.
Well, what if we leave the coach aside for now? What if the mandate is actually to change the structure of the game here in Canada?
Ah.
And if we were able to put a template down that allowed at least the progression and the development of players under a logical pyramid, if you allow me to use that analogy, maybe that's the first thing we need to do. Because we've got so much riffraff and so many clubs and so many systems and so many people involved in the game, and we're not on the same song page.
I'm with you. And I think that's the only place to start because there's no Band-Aid here that's going to make it better. So you might as well go take it right down to the foundation and try and figure this out, figure out development, hire a technical director, do all of the things. But, you know, the folks in charge here are the same folks that have been in charge for a long time. So you're talking, you need a, you know, I think there are a lot of people who would tell you need a cultural shift here within the administration of Canadian soccer. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to rely to a degree on the academies at the three MLS teams to do some of the developmental work for them. But, you know, I think the notion of professionalizing the elite programs level of the CSA is something that's got to happen. People have been talking about it for a long, long time, haven't they?
We're going to be talking about it for a long, long time to come. Stephen, great to hear your thoughts. We wish we were having an entirely different conversation. But,
Oh, yes.
But that's Canadian soccer for you. Thanks for your time, pal.
All right. Nice talking to you, boys.
Thank you, Stephen.
Stephen Brunt from the Globe and Mail and Sportsnet and Primetime Sports. Always good to hear his thoughts. If you'd like to add your opinion to his, then here's how you can do it. Email the show, nigel@fan590.com, or tweet me @Nigel_Reed. You're watching on Sportsnet World and listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Now, of course, it's all supposed to be about entertainment, by the way. Welcome back to the Soccer Show, Reed and Yerushi. And we were musing among ourselves and with the professionals the other side of the glass just how depressing a show it had become this week. So we will try and lift the spirits, if that is possible, in this final segment. But with people like Chuck tweeting me, I'm not sure it is. Chuck, a regular correspondent of the Soccer Show, says, I am 49. Well, congratulations. We look forward to your big birthday, Chuck, and we hope that we get an invitation to the party. Chuck, I'm 49. I remember Canada's only World Cup in 86. I was a student in Germany then. Can't see Canada doing it again in my lifetime. And if you live to about 120, Chuck, that's going to be a while. You know, that's what this does to you, because the next World Cup for Canada, enjoy Brazil 2014. There'll be plenty of Canadian interest. There isn't going to be a Canadian team. Next meaningful World Cup for Canada now is 2018.
Russia.
Yeah. And that's a long, long time away. And there are players now in their 30s who will be well past their sell-by date. Dwayne De Rosario, Atiba Hutchison, Patrice Benier, Julian de Guzman, Lars Hirschfeld, Terry Dunfield, the list goes on and on. You know. And now no coach either.
Well, we need a new plan.
Well, we do. Let's see if we can find one. Here is the recently elected president of the Canadian Soccer Association joining us at short notice, Victor Montaliani. Victor, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Nigel.
Victor, I can't imagine the range of emotions that you've gone through over the last 48 hours, and the amount of volume of work that's just increased with the departure of your head coach. So, I mean, Bob and I have spoken about what we went through. How was it for you, Victor?
Well, I'm sure no different than anybody else who loves our game and loves our national team. We're as much as people like to think we are, but we're not some machines up at the around the board table. We're emotional beings, and you know, it's just a feeling that one I don't ever want to experience again, and which is why we need to start get going here. And secondly, it's I think disappointment's probably an understatement in terms of how we all feel.
I think it had Honduras beaten Canada, and that was always part of the scenario. But I think if Canada had lost and lost with for some fight and spirit and dignity in that game, people would say, well, you know what, Stephen Hart did a pretty good job and he got this country to be within one point of the hex. Clearly, you can't continue after 8-1. I mean, a result like that, you just can't. So, I mean, thoughts on Stephen Hart and the fact that he's done the honourable thing, the only real option open to him. And frankly, he did the best, all bar one game, with what he had. But, you know, now you have to move on.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, on Steven, I think anybody who knows him or has gotten to know him, whether it be at a professional level or even personally, knows what kind of a quality guy he is. He's a football man who knows the game and loves the game. And overall, he's a gentleman, deals with everybody in a very honest and transparent manner. He dealt with that way with his coach, with his players. He dealt with everybody he ever came in contact with. And to be honest with you, the biggest, you know, other than the loss, the second biggest tragedy is that the last thing that a person like Stephen Hart deserves would be a defeat of that nature. But as much as this game, we call it a beautiful game, it does have a cruel side to it. And unfortunately, we witnessed it 2 days ago.
Victor, as president of the CSA, a lot of the chat that I'm hearing, including Stephen Brunt, who is here, before you came on, needs reassurance that you're not going to be part of that same old group that has the same old problems on their hands and, you know, eventually do not offer the solutions that we need. How can you let our listeners and viewers feel better about a plan that you're going to lead to try and get us in a better place going forward?
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily disagree with some of the skepticisms that have happened in years past, because we were hammered in 1993, 8-0, and we did nothing about it. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, a year ago, we had the same debacle on the women's side, and people were saying the exact same thing about the women's program. You know, it's 20 years behind, blah, 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 blah. And what I like to call the new CSA rectified that problem pretty quick, and obviously turned the program around within a 12 short months. And what I like to think is that, you know, we need to sort of get this right. The problems are a lot deeper than just this team. We all know that. Those issues existed before Honduras, still exist. They existed during the Honduras game, and they exist now. And those are player development issues. Those are professional soccer issues. Those issues exist. And, you know, I've been on your show before, and I sort of explained how we need to tackle them. And, you know, this is not a time for sugarcoating and political bullshit. It's about actually acting in the right way and ensuring that the proper decisions are made. And some of them is going to be tough love. Stuff that people might not like. And, you know, to be honest with you, that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean,
I think... Go ahead, sorry.
I'm so sorry, Victor. I thought you'd come to the end of your thought. All I was going to say was, but you know, and you point out the repair job or the renovation, if you like, of of the women's team, and that's all well and good. And the fruit of the labour was in London with a bronze medal. But you wouldn't be naive enough to think that you could fix the men's game so simply.
No, and that's why I said, first of all, A, we got more time in the sense that World Cup, you know, we don't have Olympic Games. But two, you know, the variables are a lot more deep. And, you know, when we talk about, generally speaking, about player development, when I talk about player development, let's not be naive here and think that we're developing women players better than we're developing men players. Yeah. Because I can tell you at the youth level, and if you can see our results at the World Cups, we're falling behind on that part of the game as well. And, you know, John Herdman knows that, has identified that, has an talent accelerated program to ensure that we, as he puts it, more Sinclairs more often. And so let's not be naive to think that everything's good on that side as well, on the player development. You know, the first team obviously is in good shape, but, you know, those players are not going to last forever either.
Victor, the collapse, and I don't want to go back to the game, but it is part of the moment, because we got to the moment with this team, and we weren't able to absorb the moment. It overwhelmed us. I mean, that's character more than player development. I would say to you that we didn't lose because we're technically deficient. We lost because we had no backbone. Now, whose fault is that?
Well, ultimately, everybody's going to look in the mirror in terms of, whose fault that is. But I think it is part of player development, Bob, because I think one of the things we don't do is look at the psychology of player development and how we tackle that and preparing our players at a younger age to sort of meet these challenges that we face in these countries. And, we have not, let's not look back in history and think it was all rosy. We have not, really gotten too many results in South America at any time during our history. We've gotten the odd result here and there,
yep.
But really on a consistent basis, we've never gotten it, whether it be the 60s, the 70s, or the 80s. So obviously it's an issue. It's an issue that we don't have that part down in our player development model. You're right. To me, it wasn't an issue of technical. Sure, can we have better technical players? Of course, we're always looking for that. But you're right. We're going to be in this exact position 4 years from now. I will tell you right now. We will be in the second round or semifinal round, whatever they call it. And whether it be game three, game four, game five, I don't know what game, we're going to have this moment where we're going to have to get a result. Okay? And, we need to prepare for that. We need to break through that barrier, and we need to do it on a consistent basis. And it starts with all our national teams, obviously culminating in the senior team.
30 seconds, Victor. Obviously, people looking at the players, but also the fact that you now have a head coaching vacancy. You have new corporate sponsors on board, and there is the thought that now the CSA needs to go and make a statement, spend a lot of money, get in a big international experienced head coach. Thoughts on that before we go?
Yeah, I think it's more, spending the big money. I mean, you want to ask England how that went with Fabio Capello.
Yeah.
That's not going to necessarily... sorry, Nigel.
No, fair point. No argument from me on that, Vic.
That's not necessarily the solution. The solution is finding the right coach.
Yeah.
If there's dollar figures attached to that, fine, fair enough. They are what they are. But, I think the characteristics are, they're different in terms of what is required in our region to compete. And we know that having somebody with that experience that has the ability to get results in the countries that we need to go play in, I think is paramount when we're looking at the characteristics of the next coach.
We've got plenty more shows, unfortunately, to discuss this as the weeks and months roll by. For the moment, Victor, thank you for your time.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Victor.
Victor Montagliani, the CSA president, who's got a lot more questions than answers right now. Just before we go, the other news of the day, if you like, TFC have finally made their statement on season tickets for 2013, and it's the big rollback. If you are or have been a season ticket holder, At any point in the franchise's history from 2013, you will be rolling back to 2007. Yes, year one prices. Is this too little, too late? I spoke to Tom Anselmi today, and there was myself and a bunch of fellow journalists, and a lot of points were made, one of which was mine, which was, well, you know what? Tom, I wish you success, but I wonder. I just wonder, because there's a lot of people saying to me now, it's not about the money. It's not about how much you charge for your tickets. I'm done with TFC. I can't see positivity moving forward.
Well, first of all, let's say that they did the right thing, because heaven forbid they would have kept the prices the way they were, or even as they've done the last 4 or 5 years, augmented prices. So at least they didn't do that, Nigel. So we should give them a big check mark for that. But you're right. The big thing that people want to hear, including myself as a season ticket holder, is, you know, how are we going to get better next year? And where is that ray of hope that I have to hang my decision on?
Until the product on the field gets better, there will be those that stay away. It doesn't matter what you charge. You can give them away for free and they still won't come back. You've got to get a proper coach. You've got to get a team of committed players who can be consistent week in and week out. Thanks to Stephen Brunt and Victor Montaliani, to our professionals, Dan, Igor and Jennifer. He's Bob, I'm Nigel, so you don't have to be. Until next time, thanks for listening.